Good evening, John. Welcome to the Space Show.
Good evening, Andrew.
When we look at a star such as Alpha Centaurus, it appears to be a single star. But when you get out a pair of binoculars, a very strong pair of binoculars, or even a small telescope, it becomes apparent that it's actually a double star. Are many stars like this at all?
Yes, in fact, a very large fraction of the stars in the sky are in fact double stars, although even with the largest telescopes, only a small number of them can actually be seen as two stars.
So, presumably, even the largest of telescopes cannot resolve or distinguish between these two very close stars.
That's right. There are other methods. If we look at the distribution of light through the spectrum, we can actually see lines or gaps in the spectrum corresponding to particular elements. And if we have two stars moving around one another, in other words, a binary star as we call them, then in fact we can see the Doppler effect, the actual effect of the star coming towards us and going away from us as it goes around in its orbit. And by that means, even with an ordinary telescope, one can in fact tell that there are two stars there instead of a single one. However, if we want to actually, as it were, see two stars, we need to build the equivalent of a telescope very much larger than those that exist today.
What's the largest around today?
Well, the largest working telescope is a 6-meter telescope in the Soviet Union, or Russia, as it now is. But the Keck telescope, the 10-meter Keck telescope in Hawaii, which is run by Californian astronomers, is about to come online. In fact, they have the first light in the telescope now.
One of the things they do with radio telescopes, if they want to see finer and finer detail, is rather than build a giant telescope, which of course is physically impossible, they use separated receivers. Is it possible to do that in optical astronomy?
Very much so, and that's exactly what the University of Sydney astronomers are in fact doing. We have built a new instrument which is called SUSY, which stands for Sydney University Stellar Interferometer, in which we have a number of small mirrors which will reflect the light from a star into a central building, and in fact we can simulate a conventional telescope with a diameter up to 640 meters, and of course you couldn't possibly build a telescope with that sort of aperture.
So you've got two separated mirror telescopes, have you?
Well, in fact we have 12 small mirrors. They're not actually telescopes, they're what we call siderostats. They're flat mirrors, and they just they're steerable, and they actually steer the starlight via fixed mirrors into a central building. And the way the instrument is organized is that we have six of these siderostats spread out to the north of the central part of the instrument and six to the south, and we can combine the light from any one of the northern siderostats with the light from any one of the southern siderostats, and in that way we can actually build up the sort of effect of a very large mirror, ranging from separations of 5 meters right the way up to 640 meters.
So, John, where have you built this telescope?
The instrument itself is located at the CSIRO's Paul Wild Observatory, which is near Narrabri in northern New South Wales. And it's based on a prototype that we actually developed in our own laboratories here at the University of Sydney and tested in the grounds of the National Measurement Laboratory, which is located in a suburb of Sydney.
And when did the facility open?
We actually started constructing SUSY at the end of 1987. That's when the engineers moved in and started drilling holes for the foundations and so on. We started installing the instrumentation towards the end of 1989. We got a first starlight into the instrument in 1991, and we now, after a long period of careful installation, alignment, testing in the final processes of commissioning and calibrating the instrument prior to starting its scientific program.
Why does it take so long to bring the thing into operation?
Well, it's a very sophisticated instrument, and we are in fact pushing the sort of frontiers of technology in several areas. The problems, although the idea of these interferometers, as they're called, dates back to the early part of this century, in fact little real progress was made until very recently, and it's only the advent of lasers, computer control, fast electronics, photon detectors, and adaptive optics that has made it possible to actually make one of these instruments work. The real problems are not only the fact that the wavelength of light is extraordinarily short, which means that vibrations on the level of a millionth of a meter in amplitude would completely destroy the measurements you're trying to make, but we're also looking through a turbulent atmosphere, which also completely disrupts the observations, and you have to in fact correct the tilts of the incoming waves in real time. You actually have to correct them before you can make a measurement.
That's what you meant by adaptive optics, is it?
Yes. We in fact sense the sort of tilts in the wavefronts, which are varying randomly and rapidly, just due to the turbulence in the atmosphere. We actually sense those and take them out in the instrument with adaptive mirrors.
The turbulence in the atmosphere, is it any less turbulent at Narrabri than, say, in Sydney or anywhere else?
That's not an easy question to answer directly. Certainly it will be better than in Sydney. And at Narrabri it's turned out that it's probably as good as we would find it anywhere in Australia. I think most people know that when you look at a star at night, it twinkles, and this is a result of the turbulence in the atmosphere, and it does vary from place to place, and unfortunately in Australia we don't have the superb sites such as Hawaii and South America, but at Narrabri we do in fact get what is called good seeing, and is probably as good as we could find anywhere in Australia.
Now, during the commissioning of any major instrument, of course, you'll come across problems. I dare say you've had your fair share of problems.
We certainly have. I mean, there have been a number of problems which I really wouldn't want to go into, but they have, in fact, been part of the reason that it's taken a long time to bring this unique, and it is unique, there's nothing else like it anywhere in the world, this unique instrument online.
Well, once the research program gets underway, you'll no doubt be looking towards some new findings. Of course, it's perhaps a little idle to speculate on what they might be, but is there any ideas of things you'll be looking for?
Well, certainly. I mean, in order to justify the building of the instrument, we had to put forward a fairly comprehensive range of programs which would justify its construction. And basically, we're trying to measure fundamental properties of stars, single stars, binary stars, pulsating stars. And the sort of properties that we will be measuring, and measuring directly rather than indirectly, and again by combining our observations, our angular observations, with conventional measurements, we'll be determining their surface temperatures, the radii, in other words, the actual diameters of stars in kilometers. We'll be determining masses, we'll be determining their distances away, we'll be determining shapes and the way the intensity varies across the surface of a star. There are a whole range of programs that we plan to tackle with the instrument.
And this is a world first?
Yes, there are a number of prototype instruments that have been developed around the world, but in terms of the resolution that SUSY has, it's way out in front. There are other groups in the world, naturally, that are in the still stages of planning and starting to develop instruments with high resolving power, but at this stage there is nothing that will have the resolving power of SUSY.
Well, John, we're here at the Space Show wish you good luck with your studies with SUSY, and we look forward to hearing some of the results in the years to come.
Well, thank you for the opportunity of telling you about it, Andrew.